This is Sarah Stewart Holland.
And this is Beth Silvers.
Thank you for joining us for Pantsuit Politics.
Thank you so much for joining us today at Pantsuit Politics. We have a very special episode for you. We are delighted to welcome our friend Chelsea Devantes to the show. Chelsea hosts the excellent podcast Celebrity Book Club, where she discusses celebrity memoirs. She has spent much of her career writing political comedy, including For the Problem with Jon Stewart. And today she's going to talk with us about the state of political comedy, where she thinks it's going, and what is not working anymore.
Before we get started, we have a very exciting announcement. If you're a listener of the show, last year, you know that we were both late arrivals to the brilliance that is HBO show Succession. We've caught up after the season 3 finale last spring, and season 4 starts at the end of March. And you guys, we're going to be doing real-time episode recaps on our premium channels. Beth, I'm an only child, okay? TV was my sibling, and I've waited my whole life to be able to have some sort of professional platform in which I can talk about TV like this. I could not be more excited.
I think it's going to be so fun, especially because Succession is clearly going in a very political direction for its final season. So it's perfect for our audience. We know we're going to have great discussions with all of you. I can't wait.
So it will be for our $15 a month level patrons and everyone subscribed on Apple Podcast subscriptions. You can get more info about how to become a premium member in our show notes.
Up next, the one and only Chelsea Devantes talks with us about political comedy.
Have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or ever wondered why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised? Well, unfiltered, mineral-filled water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And that about 85% of the United States uses hard water, filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine. That's where Canopy's new filtered showerhead comes in. Canopy, known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, has revolutionized the filtered showerhead. Dermatologists recommended this unique 3-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water, leaving you with healthy hair and glowing skin. Best of all, the Canopy filtered showerhead is hassle-free. Installation is a breeze. We put it in, it took like 30 seconds, guys. And its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement unlike any others on the market. Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, our listeners can use code PANTSUIT at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? Mine is at about 50%, and I'll tell you why. I have a tendency to overcommit. I want to help with everything I can possibly help with. I want to do everything I can possibly do. I want to be with people, and I forget that at the end of the day, I am an introvert, and I really need time to recharge and take care of myself. Therapy gives me important tools to do that, to recognize what's going on, to understand my battery and where it is and why it's there and what I can do to recharge. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/pantsuit today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/pantsuit. So that I do not like to spend my time or money in salons when I can help it, but I do enjoy a good manicure, and I especially enjoy spending time with my daughters doing the Olive and June Mani system at home, because we can all get a good looking manicure for around $2. We know that the polish won't chip and will last at least a full week. We get to await with anticipation the new colors that come out each season. The girls love being able to add some sparkles or choose whether they want their top coat to be matte or shiny. We just have a really good time together with salon grade tools that are so easily explained so that we can do a really good job taking care of our nails, but do it all from the comfort at home. All the choices of a big salon stored in a basket in my closet for when we're ready to hang out together. The Olive & June Manny System is a real game changer. So visit oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first Manny System.
My dear, dear friends.
Oh my God, we're so happy you're here.
I wish we were all at a Wynonna Judd concert or a Brandi Carlile concert, but this Zoom is second best.
We will be almost as good. One day, we're going to be like at Brandi's compound hanging out.
I feel it. We'll put that in the air for us.
Yeah, we'll manifest that. I was thinking about how I wanted to kick off this conversation about political humor, and I love that joke that when people make fun of Jerry Seinfeld, which who I believe to be of comedic importance, I'm not trying to bust on him, where they're always like, so what about Pop-Tarts? And I kind of want to be like, so what about political humor, Chelsea?
So what's the deal with political humor? Yeah, I'm really curious your take, but I have been having a feeling for a long time, which is that political humor has not caught up to where the people are at. Mm. They are still doing the political humor of pre-Trump, even a little before then. Like at some point, there was an incredible... You know, it was really Jon Stewart on The Daily Show when he took it over. You know, The Daily Show was just pop culture and news bits and, like, it was very lighthearted. In Jon's tenure, it became he had heavily point of view driven comedy, and he also was sampling actual footage from places people did not watch. People were not watching C-SPAN. They were not watching congressional hearings. He was taking footage and Fox News, if you didn't watch Fox News, and he was taking this footage, and it was so potent. It was so funny. It was how many people got their news. It's how people started caring and getting invested in politics. And it was so revelatory for the time. And now times have shifted and people are still doing a comedy that I think fits a better political landscape.
Yeah, they're still doing the let's take this piece of footage and make fun of it.
Yeah, or really just that, like, in, you know, the sort of like the component of satire. And this is the thing where it's like, you know, where people are, some dude at work might be like, oh, you look ugly today. And you're like, oh, that hurts my feelings. He's like, what? It's a joke. And jokes, the funny thing about them is that there's actual science and formula to them. And so it has to have a few things in order to actually be a joke. And with satire, it's all about heightening. And it's about heightening to give power to the underdog. So you're making a punchline out of the person with power. So if you're ever like, it's a joke, you know, I'm doing satire and you're making fun of like a protected class, that's actually not satire. But with Trump, in order to satirize your opinions and make fun of those clips, you have to go so far. He already went so far. And it actually makes satire a little bit impossible at times. You can't really satirize Trump because, like, how do you satirize someone who has a sound clip saying, grab them by the pussy? Like, what would I have to say out of my mouth to exaggerate that?
Right. How do you exaggerate something that's so already exaggerated?
Yeah. Now I'm doing some crazy humor if I am satirizing that. And so I think it's a struggle in many ways because of the actual content of politics right now.
Yeah, I think the only funny Trump thing is a straight up impression, and how much of that can you handle? You know,
absolutely.
I think James Austin Johnson has done the best Trump that I've seen.
Yeah.
And it is funny now because Trump isn't in my TV every day or on my phone or in the headlines every day. So when he pops in with that impression now, it's okay. I like what you said about The Daily Show. It was like taking us to a place where we weren't.
Yes.
And I think that you're right. The problem is we are there all the time now. So
all
where can humor
time.
Take us that we aren't? And
exactly.
That's hard.
We also had that moment with Sarah Cooper where she did something. Yeah. She took it and turned it just a little bit. I mean, I was obsessed with her. I thought those were so funny because to watch her with that, with his voice coming out of her mouth was something we weren't used to. So it was like, not exaggerating it, but she found a way to do that I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, I think what you just said, it kind of explains the joke exactly, which is like revealing an unexpected truth. And the truth was that seeing his words come through a Black woman's mouth gave people the awareness of just how crazy what he was saying is, because we, you know, to be a white man affords you a lot of what's the word?
Power?
Power. You know, where it was just like we were so used to it and seeing it coming out of someone's mouth who we would never let get away with those things, I think was revelatory. That said, that concept also didn't really extend beyond right. his own clips. And it wasn't really there. That wasn't like a point of view comedy, you know, that was more parody. And so I do agree that like that really gave us a moment in comedy. But I think it's that thing of like, comedians have to take us somewhere different now. And that our same tools that used to be very popular, I don't think are working anymore. And I don't feel like people are accepting that.
And since we're talking about satire, I don't know when this came out, but remember, and I know we all hate Malcolm Gladwell now. I'm hip on that take that nobody.
We've reached the tipping point, and we've tipped right over into nobody
likes Malcolm Gladwell anymore. But remember, he did that episode about satire where it's like you poll people, and both sides of the aisle were taking something from the satire that made themselves feel better. And I did think that was kind of interesting, an interesting way to think about satire. And I think that happens a lot on Saturday Night Live. Everybody is getting something to sort of glom onto and make fun of. And I thought, I wonder how much this is working on comedians. Like, because I think the other thing that happened in the Trump era in particular was this sense of like, am I making it worse? Like, will Jimmy Fallon ever live down ruffling his hair? I don't know. Probably not. Like, you know, am I humanizing? Am I, by using comedy, am I making something less impactful or less important? Am I downplaying the impression or the seriousness of this issue? And in this way, because you couldn't satire him because he was so over the top. It opened up a lot of interesting conversations, I think, about satire and political humor and what are we doing here and are we making it worse or are we making it better?
Yeah. I mean, I particularly don't, probably because I am a comedian, so this is just where I come from, but I don't ever buy into the did we make it worse arguments, only because I think, here's the thing, like ruffling his hair isn't actually a joke. Like, so him giving Trump a platform, we could definitely argue like, did it make it worse to give Trump a platform? Like, yes. Bringing him on SNL, did that give him a platform? Yes. Did making him a constant part of the news cycle, no matter if it was CNN or Fox, whatever news, it was constant free press. Did that make it worse? Yes. When it comes to making jokes, I don't think, again, like unless the jokes are making a protected class or someone who already suffers like the punchline, those power dynamics to me are so clear. But like making jokes about Trump, I think only bring awareness, which is different than a platform, which is different right. than putting Trump on your show to me.
Right.
And I know there's been a lot of arguments too of like, oh, did, you know, like political satire, and we have just so many shows came from it. Like, you know, Full Frontal with Sam B.
Yes.
And why am I not naming the 10 others? You know, it's like Jordan Klepper had with shows.
John Oliver
and all these shows. And I know there was an argument to be made of like, oh, these shows brought us Trump. Mm. It's like that is such a straw man's argument. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like it's just that's such a false equivalency. If anything, like those shows pointed out how it still wasn't enough for so many people to be aware of what they were doing and still vote for them and let them into power. And I think the truth is that those shows felt like we could save ourselves and that progressives were going to save us and that progressives had the power. And the truth is that we didn't, yeah. You know, maybe that's where it's at fault, but
it felt to me like at a certain point when The Daily Show started, there were genuine moments of discomfort, which I think is when comedy shines. It's when yes. you're laughing and you're laughing because you're like, oh shit. Like, oh no. Like that's the genius. And at a certain point, even on The Daily Show itself, it just became like there was no discomfort. It was a lot of patting ourselves on the back. Aren't we so smart? Aren't we so progressive? Aren't we so in on the joke? And it's like, I don't want to be in on the joke. I want the joke to work on me. That's what good comedy does. And I think that ecosystem of comedy shows, not always, not every episode, but sometimes there's a sense of like, you're in on the joke instead of letting the joke work on you.
Interesting. I mean, I again, heavily biased, but I think a lot of people started doing political comedy and political satire who didn't always have something to say, something deeply, deeply personal to say. And our best satirists have really strong opinions and really strong beliefs for justice. And it comes through in their comedy. John to me is like one of the most incredible political thinkers, and he genuinely, genuinely, genuinely cares. And that show was always saying something. And I do believe if you look back, like you will see like there was always like genuine messages and beliefs and a sense of justice and trying to get people to do the right thing. I do think that when we go into the larger ecosystem, sometimes people are just popping off a joke. You know, we're popping off our president joke. We're popping off our congressional joke. And to me, that's where a lot of the hollow, like, you know, we're all in on the joke. We're all, you know, you can kind of get the patterns of the jokes. Or worse to me is this like genre of comedy that came about that's like learning comedy, where basically it's like it's a TED talk with the same pattern of jokes every 40 seconds. And we're learning and we're lightly laughing. That to me, not comedy, you know? And yet it was branded as such and told to people, this is political comedy. It was not. It was a Wikipedia article with some screaming.
I love that. That's so true. I'm wondering how much you think format is driving the way people are approaching this. Because when The Daily Show first came out, I watched it from the beginning to the end, all at one time. And now I know that even the late night comics who have people like my parents who watch them beginning to end every night are also aware that what they're mostly trying to do is make a clip that gets shared everywhere. Yeah. And I wonder, especially as a writer, how you think about that and if you think that has driven some of where the political comedy shows have gone.
That's a really great question. I mean, I think in this world, all my friends are comedians. It has been so long since a viral political comedy, like late night show clip has come across my feed. I mean, like, and this is my world. Like, it's not really, I think possibly the format is driving it that way. I just really think we're not meeting people where they are in the moment, which also means how they take in content. Mm-hmm. And like, if you're aiming for the content that's online, a clip from a TV show almost never is going to translate as well as an off-the-cuff TikTok can live on its own, you know? And if you're watching a television show, it should be meeting that particular format too. So I think format has a huge piece of it. I also think, you know, the way we take in content is affecting it a lot. And the thing I will point out, and again, yes, I'm obviously a John Stan, but did you see?
We are in our 40s. Obviously, we are John Stans. Like, hello.
I love The Daily Show. I was so sad when he stopped hosting every night.
Absolutely.
And I left it when he stopped hosting it, honestly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there was something powerful about his personality and demeanor that I feel like we all grew along with, during his tenure there.
But again, like he and Trevor, I think what's so interesting to me about Comedy Central and the decision makers is that they could not see, again, like comedy has, not to be a total loser, and I don't come at comedy with being like, oh, formulas and blah, blah, blah. Like, that's not how I think of it. But if we're analyzing it, then I can go there. And they, it's like they didn't even realize how wildly different the two comedians were, even down to, and I'm not talking about like how, like where they come from or how they grew up. I'm talking about joke styles. And John is a point of view driven comedian. Trevor Noah is more of a parody impressions. Like his stand-up comedy before The Daily Show was not political satire. And so he brought us a different Daily Show that a lot of people, you know, really loved, but it wasn't a continuation of the same show.
Right.
And I think they tried to pretend it was.
And I think what's so interesting when people have conversations about political comedy, like, so we sent you that piece in the Wall Street Journal that was like, why aren't people making fun of Joe Biden? Is it because like people are so, they interviewed Dana Carvey, which I guess that's that we could start with that. We start with that choice.
It's like, this is your hot go-to to, and like Dana Carvey, genius. But like, genius. Again, meet the moment. We are in 2023. Yeah. Like,
and I just thought, okay, I agree with you to a certain extent. Like, I agree that that people are going a little easy on Joe Biden when he is rife for comedy. And I thought, but the idea that like political comedy is not out there ignores Hannah Gatsby, ignores Jared Carmichael, ignores Bo Burnham. Those are political shows. Like they
are. You know, it's interesting you say that because I don't think either of those three would ever define as political comedians.
Oh, I don't think they would either.
I think that goes to my point though, of like you're looking for comedians to take you someplace new. The comedians who are not political comedians are the ones who are doing it.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm saying? And the political comedians are not.
It's not news driven, right? It's political, but it's not newsy.
It's point of view driven.
It's 2023. This is politics. That's the point, right? The point is, in the year of our Lord 2023, everything is political. So the idea that you have political comedians, whereas like the personal is political on steroids in 2023, right? And I think so when people are out there innovating and they're pushing, I mean, they are making political points, not partisan points, right?
Yeah.
But points about how we are living in society together, what that means. Like,
that's a great point.
Come on. I mean, and I just think about like Bo Burnham has my 11-year-old singing that the FBI killed Martin Luther King. Like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Like, it's wild.
I think, that's such a beautiful point. It's like, but we really, you know, political comedy, it's like someone's in kind of a suit or a blazer, you know, they're talking straight to camera and they're kind of going off of the news of the day and then hitting their take. And Bo Burnham's over here is like playing a piano, doing a light show and revealing he was in a set the whole time. And then he's outside, you know, like,
yeah.
And I totally agree that like, politics have become everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like the comedians who are just making fun of what's going on in our life are the ones who are taking us to places that matter.
Well, and you just think about, if you look back at the history, I feel like the history of political comedy are those moments when somebody stood up and pushed it into a new realm and said, oh, no, I'm saying something political too. I'm saying it and I'm making you laugh, but I'm saying it in a new way, in a different way. I'm not going to just sit up there. Even when I was reading that article and they were talking about that record about the Kennedys that sold like 12.5 million copies, which is bananas. But it's like, that's because they were doing something new. Like, that was new. It doesn't seem new to us now when we've been making fun of politicians and their families for decades, but it was new then.
Yeah, I totally agree. And the thing I was gonna, that comes to mind with my John fandom is this season of The Problem with John Stewart, season 2, they had an episode on gender. And John sat down with a senator and just interviewed her about her beliefs and why she was pushing this bill to make it so that gender-affirming care was not available in her state. And because he is such a political thinker and he has all these qualities to him, but at the end of the day, he's always a comedian, he was able to say things that everyone wants to say and everyone wants to see said. And the clip went viral, and it went viral as, this is what good journalism is. And I was like, that's so funny. This is comedy.
Yeah.
This is comedy, but comedy is truth. Comedy makes you laugh at like the truth and what's real. And he was able to get more at the truth than a journalist because he was just saying, I think he ended the interview by saying like, well, I hope you fail extravagantly. And, hope you perish, like have a great day, you know? And I do think that like those are the things we're looking for. And like they are being done on his show. It's just on Apple and not everyone has
Well, it is so interesting because to be a comedian involves so much vulnerability. And I mean, I know this sounds fawning, but bravery. And I kind of believe it. I'm not saying like every stand-up comedy is brave, but to a certain extent, if you ask people how they feel about standing up in front of a crowd, now stand up in front of a crowd and make really vulnerable jokes, well, then, yeah, it is it's an incredible act that people—
They're all so brave. I mean, even if they're not making vulnerable jokes, even if their entire act is an impression of a duck, you're brave.
Well, and I just thought, like, wouldn't you love— Like, I would give anything to, like, take that legislator to examine what we're doing here and have, like, Jared Carmichael do that interview and then Bo Burnham do that interview and then Hannah Gatsby do that interview. Like, wouldn't that be so interesting to just watch how they take those pieces apart and engage with that woman and like make the choices. I think that would be, I will watch that all day long. I think it would be so fascinating.
I'm a maybe on that because John has 30 years of following this in and out. And he knows when he goes in for an interview, he is so fully prepared that when she sits there and says, well, you know, gender affirming care makes children want to kill themselves, he can cite all of the studies that makes that untrue and say, tell me what study. And she can't. You do have to be able to, I think for good political comedy, you do have to know politics really, really well.
And who's sitting across from you?
Yeah. And who's sitting across? I mean, like, yeah, it's always funny when the comedian knows more than the legislator.
I wonder where you think political comedy can go next. Mm-hmm. I'm sort of sad that we don't have that sort of heyday Daily Show vibe going in lots of places right now, because I do think that humor lights up our brains differently.
Yeah.
And it brought so many people into that learning space when it was lighthearted learning, not just a TED Talk with some little jokes, as you said. But like when it was lighthearted learning, I feel like people got something really important from it. And
yeah.
And now we desperately need to be able to laugh a little bit about our politics. And it's just become so challenging to find spaces where it feels okay to laugh about them. So I wonder where you think we can go from here. Can you fix this is what I'm asking you, Chelsea.
You would don't have anything to. Else going on. You should have time.
I wish I had the answer. If I did, maybe I would go start up a network. I do think there's great political comedy happening still. I love what John is doing. I see a direction where what field correspondents used to do on The Daily Show, where they're like in the field and like talking to people. So kind of like the pattern of that is ask questions that will ironically show how wrong the person you're talking to is. And those have been very funny. I think going out into the field, not with that comedic angle anymore, but to actually capture the reality of what's happening and then come in with a joke, almost like reality. I don't want to say like reality TV. I do think those lighthearted jokes don't hit anymore because no one cares. Like me making a video being like, can you believe all these anti-vaxxers don't believe in the vaccine, but they do believe in getting chickenpox shots? And you'd be like, yeah, man, we know. No. You know what I mean? Or if I was like, oh my God, can you believe this guy who is so anti-pedophile is actually a pedophile himself? You'd be like, we know. So those little quips, those little lighthearted jokes, those little tiny takeaways, I don't see what the point of them is anymore. I think we need a comedian who has something really deep to say and someone who has solutions. I actually think that's the area we have not gotten into. Where are comedic solutions, because simply pointing out the problem, I think, is extremely depressing right now.
Yeah.
I think we'll come around. There'll be a day when pointing out the problem again is revelatory and we can all laugh at it. And that's new to us. But I think right now we need someone to point out something we haven't seen before and a way forward that actually seems possible. Otherwise, it all seems like a waste of our time. It's like sign another petition comedy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What do you guys want to see?
I mean, I think when comedy is firing in all cylinders, like when a comedian is doing that, the solution is there, because the solution is we're all in this together. This is a human problem, right? Like, and we are like that connecting us together is really part of the solution, right? I saw one of those Man on the Streets, one of the best ones I've seen in a long time, because they do get a little played out. It was a woman and she was walking around and interviewing men about like reproductive, like biology. She's like, how many holes does a woman have? You know, like some of them were like, one of this guy was like standing next to his girlfriend who was an OBGYN and getting them so wrong. But it didn't feel like, again, just one more like way, like, ugh, you know, isn't this terrible? Like it felt like these guys aren't the problem. They're just a way for us to all see the problem more clearly. We're not mad at them individually. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't about like shaming this guy on the street who encountered our microphone. This is about showing how, like, revealing
how little is taught about that one. Yeah, I mean, listen, because I am a comedian, I am as far as you can go on the jaded spectrum. Like, as far as you can be over it, like, that's where I live because it's my job. But for me, I'm even still like, we know, like, how do we get our rights back? Like,
yeah. And that's what she said. She was like, vote like your rights depend on it, because they don't even know how many holes you
have. That doesn't always work. You know what I mean? Like I think maybe I need like a season of ungerrymandering enough so that a vote would matter through jokes. I think that's where I'm at, where it's sort of like, yeah, we know dudes don't know anything about women at all. But that dude didn't vote to take away Roe v. Wade.
Right, right. He was like on his jolly way through Central Park.
Yeah, I mean, I know this is not the point, but I am finding the most life-changing comedy happening in formats that are not your classic political comedy television shows. I'm seeing it happen in podcasts. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing it happen in narrative half-hour comedies. Like, if you watch Abbott Elementary, like, it's just a really funny show, but hidden inside every show is a politically minded joke that should pop your awareness a little more to the forefront. I think that's where a lot of great work is happening.
So we just talked with Megan Garber from The Atlantic about her new cover story, We Already Live in the Metaverse. Mm-hmm. And she writes in that piece about how after the Uvalde shooting, people were reaching out to Quinta Brunson to be like, can you write an Abbott Elementary show about a school shooting? And she was like, I can't even ask if y'all are okay. You clearly are not. Like, this, no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
But Megan's piece says, of course people ask for that. Entertainment is how we make meaning, and we have accelerated our reliance on entertainment to help us make meaning significantly over the past few years.
Yeah.
We are writing dramas about how politicians handled COVID before we're out of COVID. Like, we're just, we need it more and more and more because this is the only way that our brains can cope with all of the things that we're aware of. And so I see the struggle. I love SNL. And I really see the struggle with SNL because you can tell they know what they're doing is important, but it's too important. The weight of it is too much. And so I think sometimes it just, it can't work because it's that ask to Abbott Elementary. Take this thing that is too much for all of us and help me process it and also make me laugh at the same time. I just don't know if that's fair when you haven't had any lapse in time, when the comedians are still processing too.
Yeah. I'm not looking to solutions. I really am not looking to comedians for solutions. I think what they do is hard enough and important enough to connect us, to bring that vulnerability, to bring that transcendent moment where you are laughing and going, oh shit. Like, that's enough. That's enough.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I am the one who said solutions and I think I'm just like begging for it personally. But it's like, if you really think of a comedian, we're the ones who like don't have top sheets on our mattresses at 30. Do you know what I mean? Like, we live off of old pizza. We sleep with the worst of the worst. And we generally have an intense amount of failures that keep leading us to make jokes. So to go to them for solutions, and like you said, Beth, like, it's like they write that show in a week, you know? And so, and one of those nights on Tuesday, they stay up all night long. It's like a long SNL tradition, which, you know, very tough. So to hear the news, and you as a human have to take in the news, also you're going to process it and come back out with something of heft, but also hilarious. It's a really big task. And I do think it takes a really huge toll on your mental health. And I can even just speak about my own mental health. I mean, when I left The Opposition with Jordan Klepper, that was a show that really specifically was satirizing the alt-right. So like your Alex Jones, your like, it wasn't just Fox News. It was like all those alt-right spinoffs. And so you take in a lot of the content just to make jokes about it, right? So it's a lot of your day is like listening to these things before you can write about them. So when I left The Opposition, I like went to pack up my New York sublet because I was moving to LA. And I found that I own 3 crank radios, ladies and gentlemen. I had bought them because it had the paranoia and the doomsday preppers had seeped into my bloodstream. I mean, that's why mm-hmm. like Fox News is just constantly running those ads for like old coins and catheters because you end up buying them, you know? So I looked at myself, I said, oh my God, this has gotten into me in such a bad way. I gave away 2 of the crank radios. I kept one. You never know, you guys. I kept one.
My Eagle Scout husband endorses that choice, Chelsea.
Thank you. And so anyways, it can be very intense on your mental health to take it in and then to turn around and to make it funny, especially with everything we just went through in the last 4 years. I had a lot of mental health crises in the middle of doing my job that I had to learn how to make a part of my processing, to like have a cry and then write the jokes.
Yeah. And you can see that burden. I mean, again, on SNL, I think I sound like a Jared Carmichael stan. When he came out after the Will Smith, Chris Rock thing and was like, I'm not doing that with you guys right now. Like, that's not what I'm here for. Like,
yeah,
that's not what I'm here to do.
Gerard is fearless. If you saw him host the Golden Globes, which I'm sure will be the last time he ever does, he's fearless. He really just, and he's not afraid to call out what is considered like impolite or taboo.
Oof. And that takes enormous toll.
Yeah. It could also take a toll on your career and your finances and all of it.
I love it.
Yeah. You ask what we want in comedy. You know, I'm not sure that I totally know, but mm-hmm. I do love that good comedy always calls me to introspection.
Yeah.
And I think that's enough. Like, I think that I have gotten burned out on some political humor because it does feel so much like it's calling me to just feel awesome because I'm not them. I'm not those people who are hilariously dumb or uninformed or cult-like or whatever. And I don't want that. I want the comedy that says, you, ma'am, are also a lot of contradictions and complicated and irrational. And, you know, take a look at you. That's what I love from comedy.
It is so true. It's so true. And when it is done well, when you just feel like you are like, those moments when you watch something that was so brilliant and so live and so raw and just so many moving parts and it all comes together and you're like, what just happened? Like, it is such a high. It's a high to watch it. I can't fathom what it's like to do it. You know? To be like, and I mean, like, I remember, I have the poster behind me. I remember the first time I watched Ali Wong's special on Netflix in the middle of raising young kids. I can cry about it. It was so impactful on me to feel like, oh my gosh, somebody sees what I'm going through and sees like the ridiculousness and the humor and the, you know, the politics of it all. Like, our shows are political. Like, don't tell me those art shows aren't political. The main city leave. Like, and it just, I mean, I loved it so much. I could cry about how much that show meant to me.
Yeah, I can see it in your eyes. Which is like, listen, as a comedian, that's not my special, but I'm like, wow, the power of comedy. But
that's right.
I think what's really getting me about what you're saying, Sarah, is like, you are looking at politics the way, like, socio-political. Like, Ali Wong would never be considered a political comedian, but you're right. Calling for maternity leave, a very political act. And just existing as a pregnant woman on stage, Asian American, that's a political act.
Oh my God. The thing she was saying with that big old pregnant belly, I felt like this is a revolution. I'm witnessing a revolution.
It is. And I do think that's the political comedy we want right now, in that it is nothing like our traditional political comedy.
Yep.
You know, like where we're talking about life and raising kids and what you need to live in life and making jokes about it. And that is a political call for maternity leave versus the sort of monologue at you. Can you believe how ridiculous it is? Because we can believe. And Beth, what you were saying about introspection is like, I love that you want the joke on you. You know what I mean? Where you're like, I'm ready to do the work. I think that makes you a good person. I think a lot of people are like, I'm good laughing at others. But I do think that even if you just want to laugh at others, again, introspection, the act of it is you've been shown something new. You got to think about it. You got to go inwards and think about it. And I don't think we're being shown something new. We're being shown that things are terrible and we're divided and things are dumb. And we're like, we know. Yeah. And you do have to go further than that right now.
And you know, to call back here, because that's what comedians do. I know enough.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
To Jon Stewart and who else I think who's the master at it, especially on The Late Show, is Stephen Colbert. And that's because they both have such enormous empathy. You feel it. It's dripping out of them. Like, you feel that sense of like, I'm not just showing this to you. I care. I want it to be different. Like, I am invested in this and in all of you. Like, you feel it from both of them. You felt it all through The Daily Show. You feel it with Stephen Colbert. Like, I think that's why best parents watch his show from beginning to end.
I think Colbert can go a lot further. I really do. And I really think that, especially with like women's rights, I think there's a lot further to go to get to those like searingly hilarious point of view based topics. I do think like, yes, comedy brings us all together, but also like, we're pretty divided right now and we don't belong together always. You know what I mean? And so to do comedy that can apply to everyone sometimes means you're watering down your point of view. I mean, I can't even talk about Prince Harry without getting a comment being like, how dare you do this to Princess Kate? You know? And if I'm like, well, Princess Kate, you know, someone's like, how dare you ignore Harry and Meghan? It's like, politics is a million times worse.
Oh my gosh. I was wondering what your DMs were like as you were going through that.
You know what? It's so funny to me because I was like, oh, sure. You know, I'll cover Prince Harry's book. It's not normally what we do on the podcast. And then I did it and I forgot that like it would bring in people I don't want to listen to my podcast.
They are not cookies.
Like, get out of here. I got my first two bad reviews from covering Prince Harry's memoir and not being loyal to the monarchy.
You're an American.
know. Yes, but apparently I should have seen that, you know, this is all Prince Harry's words and the Queen and Princess Kate. Yeah, it's very funny.
Well, you got to wear your bad reviews like a badge of honor, you know? That's just right. Somebody That's has, right. a, has a thing to say always. That's a good transition, though, because we were hoping you'd stick around for Outside of Politics. And we really wanted to talk to you about your wedding.
Oh, my gosh. Thrilled. It was 3 months ago. I wish I could go back. I would talk about it for every day if I could.
I recently reorganized my closet and realized that I never need to buy a white blouse or a blue dress again as long as I live. Guys, I have plenty. I did want to add some much neglected color, like pink and yellow, to my closet, and I knew just where to go. Quince always has timeless pieces and a true rainbow of options that can help you build a classic wardrobe no matter the season. It's getting warmer, so I got a soft pink chiffon pleated miniskirt that is so cute, and a really beautiful yellow cashmere tee. It's short-sleeved. It's perfect for the sort of bridge weather we're experiencing right now. And the best part is all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I absolutely love it. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/pantsuit for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/pantsuit to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/pantsuit.
We're finally at my favorite time of year. Spring is here. Summer is just around the corner. We're getting our summer essentials ready. Our sunscreen, our emotional support water bottles, our steamy beach reads. But maybe you would prefer your steamy earbuds. This year, there is a new kind of essential right at your fingertips. Enemies to love, chance encounters, a slow burn, friends that become more. Whatever your favorite romantic trope, Dipsy has a spicy audio story just for you. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short and spicy audio stories that bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters. You can discover stories about second chance romances and adventurous vacation flings. That's my favorite. Hot and heavy hookups. It can be as heavy or as light as you want it to be. This is what I love about Dipsy. It is a modern approach to romance through high quality, captivating audio fiction that you can listen to in the privacy of your own headphones. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/pantsuit. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/pantsuit. That's dipsystories.com/pantsuit.
Traditionally, financial planning advice is either only for those who are already wealthy or salespeople calling themselves financial advisors who say they'll give you free financial advice but really just sell products to earn commissions. Fearless Finance takes a dramatic departure from either of those traditional models. Their entire business is built on making financial advice accessible and affordable because we know that financial literacy, stress reduction, and financial security are critical to overall well-being. I'm a little bit obsessed with Elizabeth, our Fearless Finance advisor. I've had an array of advisors in the past who answered questions like, should we be spending less on this, with evasive answers like, it depends on your priorities. Not Elizabeth. She answers with actually helpful guidelines. You're spending more than the average family of five, or I'd like to see this increase by 6%. Thank you. This is Fearless Finance's mission, to make advice affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually and they charge you by the hour. You only pay for the time you use down to a quarter hour. Their planners meet with you where you are on your financial journey, no judgment. Visit fearlessfinance.com today. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit, and you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use the code PANTSUIT. That's fearlessfinance.com and use code PANTSUIT for $50 off your first planning meeting.
Wax poetic here a moment about you. Chelsea has somehow managed through her Instagram stories, which is one of my favorite places on the internet and my husband's favorite place on the internet. And we don't share a lot of favorite places on the internet. There's not a lot of crossover. He likes pocket knives and everyday carries. This is not a, there are not places we coexist. So do you understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. He was like, remind her I'm a cookie. Don't tell her I'm a cookie. And I'm like, she knows. Okay. So
I'm so honored
to have this space and to single-handedly wrestle weddings back from this industrial complex to single-handedly make them fun and engaging and lovely again. Like, you have accomplished something for humanity the way you you invited us all along on this. And still, we're out here. We spent months on Bennifer's wedding cups, and I'm not even mad about it. I'm not. We're still in it with the cups. I'm fine. Let's stay in it with the cups. I don't know how you did that. I don't know how you did that, because there had been a lot of money spent on making weddings soulless and consumptive and terrible. And you, and I guess we should probably give some credit to your husband, how single-handedly just wrestled it back.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. That was absolutely so nice. And I'm also happy to hear you say that, because, you know, I'm writing this book and I was writing this chapter about the wedding, and I'm definitely like uncomfortable and embarrassed about how much the internet was a beautiful part of my wedding process. Amazing. And I was like, that is such a gross sentence.
No.
But planning it was at such a, there were so many people who were weighing in on Instagram that it was actually like a huge part of it, and something that I actually kind of missed, because it was like so lovely having these conversations and like disrupting the industry. But it was so fun. And it weirdly, like, Instagram was a big part of my wedding, which is, you know, not something you
but like
envision
people hear that
saying.
And if they don't understand what you're talking about, not like in this like Pinterest way, she had the thing every y'all her wedding, the things that she, you had a stand in for you and you see her so people, you could enjoy the wedding and people could get pictures taken with you.
Yeah, like vague versions of us. Thank you. I mean, I had so much fun, and I think, and I'm so happy that other people had fun. I think the key thing, which I never could have planned, was that I did not grow up in a traditional way. I don't come from a traditional family, and neither does Yasser. And I truly had no idea what was waiting for me when I went to plan a wedding. Like, I just didn't know. And like, obviously, like, I was like, oh, like dresses, party. Like, of course I want that. You know what I mean? Like, let's have a wedding. And the first time I went to try on wedding dresses, I went into the store with my friends. So here's the thing. I was like, I know I'm going to have a drag queen dress designer make my dress. I just knew it. I knew I was going to get married in gold. I'd known that all my life, right? So I set that up. And then I was like, you know, it'd be kind of fun to try on a white dress just for fun with my friends, just so I can have the moment, right? So I make this appointment for my friends. I Googled in LA most expensive wedding dress store, okay? Because I'm here to have fun. I'm not here to buy a dress, right? On the phone, she's like, what's your wedding dress budget? I said, $1 million. $1 million. She was like, huh? And I was like, $1 million. Like, I was just like, let's go. We walk into the dress store and she was like, what are you looking for? And I was like, big. Give me your biggest dress. And she looks at me like pretty confused. And I'm looking around the store and I'm like, I guess they only sell like slips in the front and like all the good dresses are in back. Like, I just really couldn't understand it. So anyways, cut to this woman bringing me slips that were $12,000 each and not meant to go over a butt or boobs or anyone who resembles a woman, you know? And so we're just like, I'm just stretching on these like little fairy gowns and walking out to my friends being like, oh my God. And she was like, did you Google the designer before coming? I was like, no, I just kind of thought every wedding dress store has a bevy of wedding dresses. And so I was just so confused. I was like, oh, I guess I have some things to learn. And I went to the next appointment and the woman was like, close your eyes. You're going to close your eyes and I want you to point to the dress that speaks to you most, because the first one you try on at the appointment, it's a big deal. So close your eyes. So I close my eyes. I point to the dress I want. And she goes, no, not that one. I said, okay. She put me in like the most hideous dresses I've ever seen. And then finally, when I found one I liked, I said, can I try on a veil? And she said, is this the one? And I was like, I don't know. And she was like, well, are you going to cry? Do you feel like crying? I was like, I don't think so. She's like, then this isn't the one. And we only bring a veil if it's the one. And I was like, give me the fucking veil right now. Right now you give me a veil. It was so anyway, so after that, I was sort of like, I don't think I understand what's going on with weddings. And I started posting all the dresses I tried on and complaining about how much they were.
This is cute. Like, I like how you're relating these two dress shopping experiences. It's very adorable. Can you tell the people how many wedding dresses you tried on?
Yes. I can't because I lost count, but over 120 for sure. And I purchased two and returned them.
And you know, returning a wedding dress, I really don't recommend it. They made you, I was at Kleinfeld's. They made me sign a bunch of paperwork. They were like, listen, ma'am, the moment you sign this paperwork, this is your dress. I was like, for sure, for sure. And I walked out and I was like, those dresses are ugly. And I like walked back in and I was like, please give me my money back. And they're like, never. Yeah, I will also say this, like I am from a line of DIY, do-it-yourself, ugh, trash queens, okay? You know what I mean? Like, we're going to the dollar store, we're coming home, we're redoing all the curtains in our house with a tablecloth. Like, this is where I'm from. And so I, even though I'm a TV writer, like, I fully have money now. I was so offended. I was so offended by the price of these dresses because, like, my mom's a seamstress. Like, I know how much tulle costs. I know that this is our cheapest fabric, you know? And so I wanted a wedding dress where you'd be like, oh, my God, you're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. And then I would, like, lean forward and, like, whisper the price. Like, it was, like, a Maxinista commercial, you know? And you'd be like, what? I'd be like, I know. Can you believe it was $5? And so I wanted a deal, but I also wanted a nice dress. And that was a really impossible search, because I just couldn't respect myself if I paid $6,000 for a slip.
I mean, I remember back in the day, Beth, did you get the advice? I mean, I've been married almost 20 years. I was a child bride. And I remember they would tell you, like,
It is wild hearing you say 20 years and looking at your face.
20 years. Remember they would tell us, like, call the venue, but don't tell them it's for a wedding.
Yes.
Do you remember that advice?
Because it's so much more expensive just if you're
yes.
Yes. They're scamming you.
They're always scamming.
How did you conceptualize your wedding for yourself? Did you think of it as an art project? Were you doing satire with the dresses? Like, how did you think about this as you got into it?
I was definitely not doing satire with the dresses. I genuinely wanted to find a wedding dress. Oh, because once I tried on a white wedding dress, I got bit by the bug and I wanted a second dress to change into. Yes. So that's why I ended up trying on all those wedding dresses. But you know what I think what happened is that, so Yasser and I, we had to, I had to move to New York City for the John Stewart job and he was coming with me. And so we had to find a venue early. So we like booked these venue appointments, even though the wedding wasn't for like 2 years away, because we're going to be gone for a year. And so we went to the first venue and we were like, yeah, seems good. Seems like a room that you stand in, you know, great. And his mom's like, please, please just see three, just see three, just see three of them. And then you can choose. And as we were walking through the second one, we're like, we're exhausted. Let's just go with that first one. And then we finally make it to the third one. And we had this idea where we were like, how funny would it be if we hired stand-ins who looked vaguely like us and put them under a sign that said, take a selfie with Yasser and Chelsea. And we did. We ended up giving a speech to our guests. We said, come find us in the back room. We want to take pictures with you guys. So they would walk back and be surprised. But that was like one of the first things we came up with. We were just laughing so hard. We were like crying. And the other thing that happened early on is that Yasser brought me a compilation of this old gospel song called Father Stretch, but it has drum beats in it and like a full like horn section. And he was like, I think you should walk down the aisle when the drums hit to this song and all the lights should go out and there should just be a spotlight on you.
Amazing.
This was like and I was like, oh my God, what? Me? Stop. like a princess. And so he said this, and that was where the whole wedding came from. We're like, okay, we know there needs to be lighting cues because we're gonna have to have a pitch black room. We need a spotlight. We need a venue that like has things like that. We want a choir. We want a band. We always knew we wanted that, and then we wanted these stand-ins. And then the whole wedding kind of came together around that. And then at some point in the process, I was like, maybe we should have flowers on the tables. Like, I don't know what else.
Oh, the centerpiece
on them,
journey.
The centerpiece journey killed me. And Yasser said to me, I don't want a single flower at this wedding. I said, how important is this to you? He said, a 10. And our visual aesthetic was lights and fog. And every time we told it to people, I would watch the disappointment crest their face as they just were so disgusted in what we had chosen. But then when you got there and saw photos, it was actually like really beautiful. And like, yeah, the only flowers were my bouquet. And then we threw 300 flowers out at our crowd unsuspectingly to like start.
No, you have to tell them about the billboard. The billboard is my favorite.
Oh my gosh. So we get to our venue and there's like a low, like it's a full size highway billboard, but it's like maybe 20 feet lower. I don't know feet, but it was a little bit too low. So it was like really in the cocktail space. And because we were touring in the middle of COVID, you know, because we're about to move, I think they were really desperate to book an engagement. And they were like, We can cover that billboard for you. Yeah, whatever you want, whatever you want. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So then 2 years later, I'm like, hey, how do we cover that billboard? And they were like, what are you talking about, ma'am? And we weren't going to put up like Chelsea and Yancey's, you know, wedding. And so we put up a picture of our moms. And we said, I don't think yes, or let me say ass. So it was like maybe a very large, I wanted to say big ass wedding. He said a very large wedding by the request of our mothers. And then we photoshopped our moms together and they said, no, we'll have a photo shoot. Thank you.
Amazing.
So they got glam. They got a photographer. They wore white. And they, but now we have these like beautiful pictures of our moms. And so when you got to the venue, it truly, I was starstruck by our own choice. Cause when you pulled up, there was this giant billboard of our like joyous moms and it like set the tone for everything. And so I think the other thing too, and like, listen, did someone reach out to me and say, do you want to host a wedding show where you deconstruct weddings? And did I say yes? Yes, I did. So yeah, I want to talk about this forever. But I think for me, going to weddings was always a burden. Like, yeah. Was it a burden for you guys? Like, I was always like, I don't have money for this. Mm-hmm. I don't have time for this. I can't take off work. Like, weddings were burdens. And so I really set out to make a wedding experience. Like, for me, it was not my special little day. Like, it was, but I was like, this is your special little day. Mm-hmm. I just don't want it to be a burden for you. And so I also was trying to make it a good experience.
I mean, it sounds like I went to your wedding, but I didn't. That's how much you've invited everyone.
You were so lovely and supportive in my wedding journey. You helped quite a bit.
I was in it because I never stopped caring about wedding. My Instagram, like, suggestions is still stinking wedding dresses, and I've been married for 20 years.
It'll be that way for, oh my God, Beth, you gave me the cake idea. Will you share your cake?
Well, so I didn't want flower centerpieces either, mostly because Chad and I paid for our wedding, and
that's
really expensive. And we didn't like them enough to justify the expense. And so we worked with this baker, and she made cakes for every table, and every layer of each cake had different flavors. And so all of the cakes at the tables were different, and it got people up and like roaming around to find the kind of cake that they wanted. It was cute. It was really fun. Yeah.
And it's gorgeous, economical.
I was not at Beth's wedding either, but I would have sampled I would not have stopped until Beth knows this, until I sampled every single layer at every single table. Because cake is the best part of weddings.
They were so good.
That was the best centerpiece idea I think I got. And I got lot of great ones, but the cake one, I feel like that should be like on my billboard. They should have been on my billboard to let people know you can do it at your wedding.
Oh, it's See, just
this,
so fun.
This was my version of wanting a wedding to not be a burden, because I had that exact same thought process. So my version was my bridesmaids can pick out their own black dresses. Just whatever black dress you want to wear is great, so you can wear it again. We're going to have a cocktail hour before the ceremony so no one's hungry. Because I've been in so many weddings where I've been starving and I didn't want anybody hungry. I did not think about like fog and lighting and billboards. So I just feel like I didn't push it far enough, but I was in that line of thought with you.
Yeah. No, but I think when you have that line of thinking, it's always like a nice wedding. It's so funny to be like, oh, it's your special day. It's like, well, you have asked everyone else to come. Like, we should think about it for them as well.
I always want to feel like I know the people better when I leave. I want to feel I understand you guys better when I leave. If I could have been anybody's wedding, we could have subbed in somebody else. That's why'd I come.
I think that is what I wish, you know, when I went to go be like, what are weddings? I guess I don't know. I wish that was like a more available piece of advice. And like, that was the other thing with ours. One of the first things we decided to is that our dress code was try and outdo us.
I love that. That's so much.
And I think it also really works because knowing us and knowing how crazy we dress, like that, you sort of got it, you know? And so that to me though, also it's like, then you get to like dress up and put on a like a halo or a feathered cape or like a little cane or like a bird
in
your hair.
And they showed up. Your guest.
They showed out.
They took that instruction to heart.
Yes. They knew we meant business.
Oh, so good. So good. I mean, I want a full-length feature. I messaged you immediately. I was like, you keep going. Do people want to know more? And I finally was like, there's not enough, Chelsea. Like, just keep the steady flow. Go ahead and do a renewal in like 5 years. We'll all be in there for that. Like, just... there's not enough ever. So just keep going.
It's so funny because I definitely was like,
all I wanted, I mean, I have more to say, but because we've seen those brides online who are like, you guys, okay, so these were our pajamas and these are champagne glasses. And you're like, okay, we get it. I like can't let myself become one of those, but like if given the chance, like I will throw another wedding every day.
Do it. I just think
it was joyous to be one of your Instagram followers through this process because you allowed it to be fun.
Yep.
So kind of gave us all permission to like make celebrations our own, to like take the loose framework of a wedding and then really do you into it. And I love that.
Man, thank you.
And without distracting from what you were there to do is really beautiful. What you were there to do is special and beautiful.
And worthy of the party around it.
To actually get married.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? I will say like, I thank you so much for saying that. And Instagram really gave back to me. Ugh. I mean, the people in my DMs truly helped us plan this wedding. And that's the thing, too. So Yasser was shooting a movie until 9 days before the wedding. So I really took the wedding over and was thrilled to do so. Like, I was not like, where are you? I was like, I've got it. Like, me, my bridesmaids, and my Instagram DMs, like, we're going to do this thing. And people had, like, the most incredible ideas and insights. And, like, all the brides in my DMs who had been brides before were like, go to the max, like no regrets.
Yes.
Like you guys do you, like do not like the spirit of their mother-in-laws were speaking through them as they said, compromise for no one. And I really took it to heart. And he and I were like, we spent the whole honeymoon talking about our wedding. And, you know, when we started the wedding process, we're like, we don't need a fucking videographer. Like, I don't need a video of my dumb wedding, right? We ended the process being like, where's the video? We want to watch it every day. It's the best day of our lives.
Well, and kudos to him because he still came up with his surprise wardrobe change, which...
This man, I said, Yasser. So I changed Yasser's 3 times. This is the other thing too. I did compromise. People were like, oh, if you spend so much time changing, you're going to miss the party. Lies. I can do quick changes. I'm a performer. Y'all talked me out of 2 extra dresses and I feel bad for all of us. But anyways, I changed 3 times and I was like, Yasser, I'm going to change a bunch. Like, do you want to change? He's like, ugh, no, I'm not going to change. This man, his sibling is a barber and Brittany shaved his head
between. Oh my God. Your face.
In between the ceremony and the reception. Yeah. And then he put on a wig. So we came out with like him wearing his normal hair. And then he did a wig reveal during our first dance. He had changed suits. And then I looked over and he came out in a full head to toe camo gear, which as someone who wasn't going to change, I loved it. And the next morning when we woke up in our suite, I turned to look at him and he has this like plastic digital mask on and like there's little hearts like blinking where the eyes and the mouth are. And I just hear him say, oh, I meant to wear this. So he really showed out.
Oh, that's perfect. Chelsea, thank you so much for spending time with us. It is always a delight.
Thank you for letting me discuss comedy and weddings. I feel such a deep friendship with you guys, even though we haven't met. And I will say doing the Apple Spotlight podcast thing, I think the best benefit was supposed to be that it brought more people to my podcast. But the biggest benefit was meeting you guys. Aww, so thank you so much.
Totally mutual. It was a good excuse that you were on your honeymoon when we went to see Wynonna Judd.
I guess.
But we can't have another situation like that. You see what I'm saying? Like if there's another opportunity, we have to make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait.
Listen, y'all, let's be serious. I'm 42 years old. Of course, I take my skincare routine seriously. There are a lot of daily skincare products on the market claiming to help reduce fine lines and wrinkles, but how do you know your products are actually working? Well, Ritual is here for you. They have Hyacera, their once daily skin supplement, clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. They conducted a clinical study and it led to a 3.6 times reduction in crow's feet within 90 days as compared to a placebo and a 2.9 times increase in skin smoothness within 90 days as compared to a placebo. I love taking my Hyacera every day as part of my skincare routine instead of just slathering more products on my face. It feels like I'm doing something from the inside out. And their one daily capsule is essenced with soothing vanilla, so it's a very pleasant experience. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pantsuit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/pantsuit for 25% off.
Spring is so tricky because I feel the sun shining, the earth is waking up, and I want fresh, vegetable-forward meals. And I'm running in 75 directions and don't have a lot of kitchen and prep time. Fortunately, Factor is here for me and for you with fresh, never frozen meals that are chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in 2 minutes. They have a ton of options for us, including keto, protein plus, vegan, veggie, calorie smart, and so many add-ons. If you need help with breakfast or snacks or on-the-go lunches or beverages, Factor is here for you. Every meal I've had from Factor is so well composed. It's so flavorful. The sauces are delicious. And Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look for Earth Month Eats badges on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/pantsuit50 and use code pantsuit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code pantsuit50 at factormeals.com/pantsuit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they made solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15. Thank you so much to Chelsea for joining us today. We would love to hear from all of you about what's funny, what's not funny. Do you like those TED Talks disguised as humor? What does it for you? Don't forget to head to our show notes and learn how to become a premium member so that you can join that conversation with other listeners and so you do not miss out on our succession discussions beginning at the end of March. We'll be back in your ears on Friday. Until then, everybody have the best week available to you. Pantsuit Politics is produced by Studio D Podcast Production. Elise Knapp is our managing director.
Maggie Penton is our community engagement manager. Dante Lima is the composer and performer of our theme music.
Our show is listener supported. Special thanks to our executive producers.
Martha Brunitsky.
Allie Edwards.
Janice Elliott.
Sarah Greenup.
Julie Haller.
Helen Handley.
Tiffany Hassler.
Emily Holiday.
Katie Johnson.
Katina Zuganellis-Kasling.
Barry Kaufman.
Molly Kors.
Katherine Vollmer.
Lori Ladau.
Lily McClure.
Linda Daniel.
Emily Neasley.
The Pettons!
Tawny Peterson.
Tracy Putoff.
Sarah Ralph.
Jeremy Sequoia.
Katie Steigers.
Karen True.
Annika Uvaline.
Nick and Elisa Valelli.
Amy Whited.
Emily Helen Olson.
Lee Shea McDonough.
Morgan McHugh.
Jeff Davis. Melinda Johnston. Michelle Wood. Joshua Allen. Nicole Berkless, Paula Bremer, and Tim Miller.